There was silence from the back seat. Ruby is the littler one, right? Said Erica's mother in her regular voice. How old is she? 2?
Yes, said Erica.
What happened? Nobody saw her fall in? Where was her mother? What was Clementine doing?
Nobody saw her fall in, said Erica. It was just one of those unfortunate things.
So, she wasn't breathing when you pulled her out?
No, said Erica. She watched Oliver's hands tighten on the steering wheel.
The two of you worked together?
Oliver did compressions, I did the rescue breaths.
How long before she responded?
It felt like a lifetime, said Erica.
I bet it did, said Sylvia quietly. I bet it did.
Then she leaned forward and patted their shoulders.
Well done, she said. I'm very proud of you two. Very proud.
Neither Erica nor Oliver said anything, but Erica could feel their mutual happiness filling the car. They both responded like thirsty plants to water when it came to parental approval.
So, little Miss Perfect Clementine isn't so perfect after all, crowed Sylvia as she leaned back in her seat. There was a triumphant, bitchy edge to her voice. Ha! What did Pam have to say about that? My daughter saved her grandchild's life.
Erica sighed, and Oliver's shoulders slumped. Of course she would ruin the moment. Of course she would. Pam is very grateful, she said flatly.
Well, that certainly evens up the score then, doesn't it? For all that family supposedly did for you.
They didn't supposedly do anything, Mum, said Erica. Their home was a haven for me.
A haven, snorted Sylvia.
Yes, that's right, a haven, with running water and electricity and actual food in the refrigerator.
Oh, and no rats. That was nice, the lack of rats.
Let it go, said Oliver quietly.
Well, all I'm saying, my darling child, is that we don't have to feel quite so grateful to them now, do we? Quite so subservient, like they're our feudal overlords. You saved that child's life.
Yes, well, and now Clementine is going to donate her eggs to help us have a baby, so we're going to be back to feeling grateful to them, said Erica. It was a mistake. As soon as she said it, she knew it was a mistake. There was a beat. Erica looked at Oliver. He shook his head as he resignedly flicked on the indicator to turn right.
I'm sorry. What did you just say?
Sylvia leaned forward as far as her seatbelt would let her.
Damn it, Erica, sighed Oliver.
We've been going through IVF for the last 2 years, said Erica. And my eggs are rotten. Because of you, she thought. Because I grew up in filth, surrounded by rot and decay and mold. So germs and spores and all manner of malignancy found its way into my body. She hadn't been at all surprised when she couldn't get pregnant. Of course her eggs had gone off. No surprises there.
They're not rotten, said Oliver in a pained way. Don't say that. You never told me you were going through IVF, said Sylvia. Did you just forget to mention it? I'm a nurse. I could have given you support. Advice.
Yeah, right, said Erica.
What do you mean, yeah, right?
We never told anyone, said Oliver. We just kept it to ourselves.
We're strange people, said Erica. We know it. You always said you never wanted children, said Sylvia.
I changed my mind, said Erica.
You'd think she'd signed a contract the way people kept reminding her of this.
So Clementine offered to donate her eggs, said Sylvia. We asked her, said Erica. We asked her before what happened with Ruby. But you can bet your bottom dollar that's why she's doing it, said Sylvia. Look, none of this is definite yet, said Oliver. We're right at the early stages. Clementine still has to have tests, see a counsellor. It's a horrible idea, said Erica's mother. An absolutely horrible idea. Surely there are other options. Sylvia, began Oliver. My grandchild won't really be mine, said Sylvia. Narcissist. That's how Erica's psychologist described her. Classic narcissist. My grandchild will be Pam's grandchild, continued Sylvia. It's not enough that she has to take my daughter. Oh, no, now she can lord it over me with this. We're just so happy to help out, Sylvia. So condescending and smug. It's a horrible idea. Don't do it. It'll be a disaster. This isn't about you, Sylvia, said Oliver. Erica could hear a pulse of anger in his voice. It made her nervous. He rarely got angry, and he always spoke with such scrupulous politeness to his mother-in-law. Why in the world did you ask her? Said Sylvia. Find an anonymous donor. I don't want my grandchild to have Pam's DNA. She's got those big elephantine ears. Erica, what if your child inherits Pam's ears? For heaven's sake, Mum, said Erica. I read somewhere there's a gene associated with compulsive hoarding. I think I'd prefer my child to have big ears than become a hoarder. Please don't use that word. I abhor that word. It's so accurate, murmured Erica. There was silence for a few seconds, but Sylvia rallied fast. What will you say when Clementine comes to visit? She said. Oh, look, darling, here comes your real mother. Off you go and play the cello together. Sylvia, please, said Oliver. It's unnatural, that's what it is. Science has gone too far. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should. They pulled into Clementine's parents' street. It used to take Erica only 10 minutes to walk here as a child, to leave all the dirt and the shame behind. Erica looked out the window as they pulled up in front of the neat Californian bungalow with its olive green front door. Just seeing that olive green front door used to make her heartbeat slow. Oliver turned off the windscreen wipers, twisted the key in the ignition, undid his seatbelt, and turned to look at his mother-in-law. Could we please not talk about this over dinner? He said. Could I ask you that, Sylvia? Of course I won't. Sylvia lowered her voice. Take a look at Pam's ears, though. That's all I'm saying. She caressed one earlobe. I myself have such dainty ears. Chapter 69. Ding, ding, ding. Pam tapped her spoon on the side of her water glass and got to her feet. Could I have your attention, please? Clementine should have known. There was going to be a speech. Of course there was. Her mother had been delivering speeches all her life. Every birthday, every holiday, every minor academic, sporting, or musical achievement merited a speech. Oh, goodness, are you going to sing for us, Pam? Said Sylvia, turning in her chair to regard Pam. She winked at Clementine. Clementine shook her head at her. She knew that Sylvia had been a terrible mother to Erica, that she had said and done unforgivable things over the years, and that was all in addition to the hoarding problem. But Clementine had always felt traitorously affectionate toward her. She enjoyed Sylvia's subversiveness, her outlandish comments, her meandering stories and snarky, sly little digs. In contrast, her own mother always seemed so staid and earnest, like a well-meaning minister's wife. Clementine especially enjoyed seeing Sylvia's outfits. She could just as easily look like a bohemian intellectual as a Russian princess or a homeless person. Sadly, she'd chosen homeless person for Erica's wedding in order to make some long-forgotten, convoluted, pointless point. Tonight, Sylvia looked like a lady who lunched. You would think she was going home tonight to a glossy McMansion with a banker husband. "I hope you'll allow me the indulgence of saying a few words," said Pam. "There are two people here tonight who can only be described as..." She paused and took a deep, shaky breath. "Quiet heroes." "Hear, hear," said Clementine's dad too loudly. He'd been drinking more than usual. Erica's mother made him nervous. Once, she'd sat next to him at a school concert, and while discussing local politics, she had apparently put her hand very close to his... you know what? This was how Pam described it, causing Clementine's dad to make the most peculiar sound, like a yelp. "Yes, that's what they are. Quiet, unassuming, unsung heroes, but heroes nonetheless," continued Pam. "Gaw." Sylvia put her head to one side in an "oh shucks" way, as if Pam were referring to her. Erica rotated one shoulder as if she had a stiff neck. Oliver adjusted his glasses and cleared his throat. The two of them looked profoundly uncomfortable. "Why did you invite Erica's mother?" Clementine had asked Pam earlier that night. "Well, I thought it would be nice for Erica," Pam said defensively. "We haven't seen Sylvia for a long time, and her hoarding has gotten very bad again lately, so I thought it might be helpful." "But Erica hates her mother," said Clementine. "She doesn't hate her," Pam had said, but she'd looked upset. "Oh, gosh, I probably shouldn't have invited her. You're right. Erica would have enjoyed the night more without her. You try to do the right thing, don't you? And it just doesn't always work out that way." Now she looked brightly around the room. "They don't want accolades. They don't want medals. They probably don't even want this speech." She gave a merry laugh. "I want a medal," said Holly. "Shh, Holly," said Sam on Holly's other side. He had barely touched the food on his plate. "Yet some things simply cannot go unsaid," said Pam. "But I do want a medal," demanded Holly. "There is no medal," hissed Clementine. "Well, why did Grandma say there was?" "She didn't," said Sam. Erica's mother giggled deliciously. "The debt of gratitude we owe Erica and Oliver is of such magnitude," said Pam, "that I cannot even begin to..." "Could I trouble you to pass the water, Martin?" said Sylvia in a loud whisper to Clementine's father. Pam stopped and watched her husband half stand and awkwardly place the jug of water next to Sylvia while avoiding any eye contact whatsoever. "Sorry, Pam," said Sylvia. "Carry on. Lovely earrings, by the way." Pam put her hand confusedly to one ear. She wore the plain gold studs she always wore. Thank you, Sylvia. Where was I? "The debt of gratitude," said Sylvia helpfully as she poured herself a glass of water. Oliver tipped back his head and studied the ceiling as if for inspiration or salvation. "Yes, the debt of gratitude," said Pam. Ruby, who had been sitting on a cushion on the chair next to Clementine, suddenly put down her spoon with a purposeful air and slid onto the floor. "Where are you going?" whispered Clementine. Ruby put her hand to the side of her mouth.
Going to sit on Grandpa's lap.
I wanted to sit on Grandpa's lap, huffed Holly. I was actually just about to go and sit on Grandpa's lap.
There is a quote, said Pam. There always was. She swept her hands wide, palms facing the ceiling. She liked to deliver her quotes with this particular statesmanlike gesture. Friends are the family we chose for ourselves.
Indeed, said Sylvia. So true.
I'm not quite sure who said it, admitted Pam. She liked to attribute her quotes. I meant to check.
Don't worry, Pam, we can always look it up later, said Clementine's dad.
Oliver could check right now, offered Sylvia. Oliver, where's your phone? He's so quick. Tippity-tippity-tap, and he has the answer.
Mum, said Erica.
What? Said Sylvia.
Friends are the family we chose for ourselves, repeated Pam, and I'm just so glad that Clementine and Erica chose to be friends. She glanced at Clementine and then hurriedly looked away.
Erica, Oliver, your amazing actions that day saved our darling Ruby's life. We can obviously never truly repay you. The debt of gratitude I think we already covered the debt of gratitude, said Sylvia, didn't we? Anyway, from what I hear, the debt is set to be cleared.
Sylvia, said Oliver. Sylvia gave Clementine a roguish look. She leaned close and whispered so that Oliver and Erica couldn't hear.
You and Oliver, eh?
Clementine frowned. She didn't get it.
Making a baby together, clarified Sylvia.
Her eyes sparkled maliciously. Clementine saw that Erica's jaw was set in the manner of someone enduring a painful but necessary medical procedure.
Erica and Oliver, we love you. We thank you. We salute you.
Pam lifted her glass.
To Erica and Oliver.
There was a scramble as everyone found wine or water glasses and raised them too.
Cheers, cried Holly.
She tried to clink her lemonade glass against Clementine's wine glass.
Cheers, Mummy.
Yes, cheers. Be careful, Holly, said Clementine. She could see that Holly was on the cusp of crazy. These days you could never tell what she was going to do next, and right now she was drunk on too much lemonade.
Cheers, Daddy, said Holly.
Sam didn't register her. He still had his wine glass lifted, but his eyes were on Ruby sitting on Martin's lap, whispering something to Whisk.
I said cheers, Daddy, said Holly angrily,
and she got up on her knees on her chair and slammed her water glass so hard against her father's wine glass that it shattered in his hand.
Jesus!
Sam leapt back from his seat as if he'd been shot. He turned on Holly and yelled,
That was naughty! You are a very naughty, very bad girl!
Holly cowered.
Sorry, Daddy. It was an accident.
It was a stupid accident, he roared.
Okay, that's enough, said Clementine.
Oh, dearie me, said Pam. Sam stood. There was blood on his hand. For a moment, the only sound was the perpetual patter of rain.
Do you want me to take a look at that cut?
Offered Sylvia.
No,
said Sam rudely. He sucked the side of his hand. He breathed heavily.
I need to get some air.
He left the room. That was all Sam did these days. Leave the room.
Well, there's a little drama to spice things up,
said Sylvia. Oliver stood and began collecting the pieces of glass in the palm of his hand. Come sit here with me, Holly, said Erica, pushing back her chair and patting her legs. And to Clementine's surprise, Holly slid off her chair and ran to her.
I had told you to be careful, Holly, said Clementine, and she knew her sharp rebuke was only because she'd been expecting the comfort of Holly's body against hers. She wanted Holly to sit on her lap, not Erica's, and that was childish. All her emotions had become tiny and twisted. She really should cancel her audition. She was too emotionally stunted to ever be a good musician. She imagined her bow screeching and scraping across the strings as if she'd suddenly become a beginner. Squeaky, unpleasant notes to match her squeaky, unpleasant emotions.
Right. Well, cups of tea, coffee, said Pam. Erica brought along some very nice chocolate nuts that will go very nicely with a cup of tea. Just the ticket.
Isn't she clever? Said Sylvia.
I'm quite remarkable, said Erica. As Pam began the complicated process of confirming everyone's tea and coffee orders, Clementine collected plates and took them into the kitchen. Her father followed her, carrying Ruby, who had that comfy, superior look children always got in the arms of a tall man, like a fat-cheeked little sultan.
You okay? Said her father.
Fine, said Clementine. Sorry about Sam. He's just stressed about work, I think.
Yes, he does seem stressed about the new job, said Martin.
He put Ruby down as she began to wriggle.
But I think it's more than that.
Well, it's been hard for him ever since the accident, said Clementine. She wasn't sure if she was allowed to call it an accident, if that implied she didn't consider herself responsible. Sam blames himself for not watching Ruby. And I know, he also blames me, said Clementine. It was somehow easier to just boldly admit it to her dad, who would just take what she said at face value, rather than her mother, who would listen too intently and empathetically and filter everything through her own emotions.
And I guess I blame him, said Clementine. And at the same time, we're both pretending we don't blame each other at all.
Right, said her father. Well, that's called being married. You're always blaming each other for something.
He opened a kitchen cupboard and began taking out mugs.
What's the bet I'm getting the wrong ones out?
He turned to look at Clementine, holding two mugs by the handles on his fingertips.
But I reckon there's something more going on. He's not right. He isn't quite right in the head.
Not those ones, Martin, Pam bustled into the kitchen. We want the nice ones.
She took the mugs off him and swiftly put them away.
Who isn't right in the head?
Sam, said Clementine.
Oh, I've been saying that for weeks, said Pam.
Chapter 70.
Hello again.
Tiffany lifted her umbrella to see who had spoken. She was walking through the quadrangle toward the St. Anastasia's shop to buy Dakota's uniform for next year. It was Andrew's wife again. Of course it was. Murphy's Law would ensure that Tiffany ran into this woman and or her husband every time she entered the school, and at every school event until Dakota finished high school. It wasn't going to be at all uncomfortable. No, it was going to be freaking great. Kara and Dakota would become best friends. They'd invite them over for a barbecue. Where did you guys meet? The nice wife would innocently ask, and her husband would clutch his chest and drop dead of a heart attack.
Handy. Except then Oliver would rush over from next door and revive him.
Tiffany, right?
I'm Lisa, said Andrew's wife. She tilted back her own battered umbrella to reveal her face. There were soft pink pouches under her eyes. One of the metal spokes of her umbrella had broken free of the fabric and was directed at her face like a weapon.
You probably don't remember me. I sat next to you at the information morning.
I remember. How are you? Said Tiffany.
Not great. This constant rain is doing my head in, said Lisa.
She surveyed Tiffany.
You look well. Do you take some sort of secret supplement?
Caffeine, said Tiffany.
Seriously, it's a pleasure to look at you.
Tiffany laughed uneasily. Was she about to say, I understand my husband used to pay good money just to look at you? Are you buying Kara's school uniform too? Said Tiffany. She knew that the uniform shop, run by our lovely volunteers, opened for just 45 minutes at this time, and strictly no longer, and it was first in, best dressed. Literally. Would it seem odd that she remembered Lisa's daughter's name? Suspicious.
We're moving to Dubai for the next 5 years.
Oh, again.
We're moving to Dubai for the next 5 years. So Kara won't be attending St. Anastasia's after all.
Oh, well, that's... Tiffany tried to think of a more appropriate way to end the sentence rather than wonderful news, although paradoxically, irrationally, she found herself feeling almost disappointed.
She liked Lisa. It's a pleasure to look at you. Who actually said that? It was nice.
How do you feel about that? She said. I'm trying to feel okay about it, said Lisa. We did the expat thing when the kids were little, and it was all fine, but I just don't think I have the energy to do it again. We're very settled in Sydney, and this just came out of the blue. It happened on Wednesday, the same day as the information morning, actually. My husband hears about some marvelous, incredible opportunity that he can't pass up, or some bullshit. She put her hand to her mouth. Probably shouldn't swear on Catholic school grounds. She looked up.
God won't like it.
Don't you have a say in the matter? Said Tiffany. Lisa raised a hand in defeat. Some battles can't be won, and this is one of them. I don't think it rains much in Dubai, so that's something. She suddenly thrust out the bag she held in her hand. Here, take it. Got the lot there. Our kids looked about the same size. I can't be bothered going through the rigmarole of getting my money back. Roxanne Silverman runs the uniform shop. She always asks me if I've lost weight, which is her passive-aggressive way of saying I need to lose weight. Tiffany took the bag, unwillingly. I'll pay you.
Nope, said Lisa. Take it. I insist. Apparently we can afford to lose all those non-refundable deposits on school fees.
Please, said Tiffany, please, let me give you... She put the bag at her feet and began trying to get her wallet out of her handbag while still holding her umbrella.
I'm off. You take care, said Lisa.
She turned on her heel and walked away, her umbrella blowing sideways.
Well, thank you, called out Tiffany.
Lisa raised her umbrella in acknowledgement and kept walking. Tiffany watched her go. A bell rang, and a babble of girlish voices rose from the nearest building like a flock of seagulls. Seagulls with nice private schoolgirl accents. She thought about Lisa's husband. Lisa's husband was a polite, softly spoken man. He'd been interested in Tiffany's degree. He'd liked her schoolgirl outfit best, a green and white checked uniform not dissimilar to the one still in its cellophane wrapper in the bag she now held, the one his daughter would have worn if she'd attended this school. Lisa's husband drank Baileys and milk. A girly drink, she used to tease him about it. Lisa's husband used to slip a huge wadge of tipping dollars into her garter in one go, instead of making her work for them, or worse, teasing her, as if the tipping dollars were dog biscuits. Fuck that. Lisa's husband had taken her out a few times after work. Once he'd come to see her perform in the day, and after she finished work, they couldn't find anywhere open for lunch, so he'd booked a hotel room just so they could order room service. It had been a revelation to Tiffany how you could use money to manipulate your world. When things went wrong, you just waved your credit card like a magic wand. After lunch, he'd gone back to work and she'd had a free hotel in the city for the night. She'd invited some of her uni friends over to stay. None of them believed she hadn't slept with him, but she hadn't. They'd just eaten club sandwiches and watched a movie. He had been a friend. She'd been like his hairdresser, except she hadn't cut his hair. She'd danced for him. Their relationship had felt wholesome. It was maybe a whole year after that, after she'd given him a private show, that Lisa's husband had asked Tiffany, in his polite, reticent way, if she'd ever seen that movie, Indecent Proposal? The one with Robert Redford and Demi Moore? The one where Robert Redford paid some obscene amount to sleep with Demi Moore? Tiffany had seen the movie. She understood the question. $100,000, she'd told him, before he'd even asked. She had pitched it low enough to be a possibility, but high enough so it was still a joke, a dare, a fantasy, and it didn't make her a hooker. He hadn't hesitated. He'd said, "Will you take a check?" It was a company check from Something or Other Holdings, and it was enough for the deposit on the apartment she'd bought at the auction where she'd met Vid. It had laid the foundation of her financial fortress. She'd always told Vid that she'd never slept with any of her clients. She was a dancer, not a hooker. And it still felt true. What happened with Andrew was a one-off with a wealthy older friend. A joke. A dare. A fun idea. She might have done it for the cost of two drinks if she'd met him in a bar and he'd made her laugh. Even after she had slept with him, she'd still felt like their relationship had a kind of wholesomeness to it. They had straightforward, missionary position sex with a condom. She had a dirtier relationship with Vid. She remembered that afterwards, while they were in bed together, Andrew had begun to talk about a one-bedroom apartment he owned in the city. Something about a trust. Something about tax advantages. It took her a while to catch on that he was offering her an opportunity, a mutually beneficial long-term arrangement. She had politely declined. He'd said to let him know if she ever wanted to reconsider. About 6 months later, he came into the club and booked her for a private show. He told her that he was moving the family overseas for a year. It wasn't long after that, Tiffany finished her degree, stopped dancing, and got her first full-time job. In all her dealings with Andrew, she'd never thought of his wife. "What about the wives?" Clementine had said in the car that night. "The wives stuck at home with the kids." Tiffany had answered with a shrug. The faceless, middle-aged wives had never been her responsibility. She wished them no ill. She owed them no duty of care. They probably didn't have great bodies, but they had great credit cards. Her deal with Andrew was the only secret she'd ever kept from Vid. She wasn't ashamed, and in all honesty, she wasn't even sure it was necessary. But every time over the years when she'd gone to open her mouth and share her story, her instincts had screamed, "Shut the hell up." Even her free-spirited Vid had his boundaries, and she didn't want to find out what they were by crossing them. So, no, she'd never felt shame about what had happened with Andrew, except for right now. As she stood in the rain, holding an environmentally friendly bag, heavy with free, expensive school uniforms, watching his tired, disappointed, chunky around the middle wife head back through the rain to her black four-wheel drive Porsche. Because maybe the timing of this unexpected move to Dubai was a wonderful coincidence. But then again, maybe it wasn't. Chapter 71. It was because of the rain. If only the rain had stopped, then Erica wouldn't be standing here right now on a Saturday morning in her living room with the sound of her heart thumping in her ears, feeling like she'd been arrested, except the policeman was her own husband. Oliver didn't really look like a policeman. He looked sad and confused. She wondered if that was the same expression he'd got on his face as a child when he found the bottles of vodka and gin his parents had hidden around the house, before he stopped believing their excited promises about giving up. They still made extravagant promises. "We're doing dry July. We're doing sober November." It had happened when she was out renewing her license. She'd been in a good mood when she came home. She liked starting her weekend by ticking off those kinds of day-to-day administrative tasks that her mother had so often left undone. Bills left unpaid, disconnection notices ignored, unsigned permission slips immediately lost in the maelstrom. But then Oliver met her at the door. "We've got a leak," he said. "A roof leak. In the storeroom." They had a small storeroom where they kept their suitcases and camping gear and skis. "Well, that's not the end of the world, is it?" she asked, but her heart started to beat double time. She had an inkling. Oliver, being Oliver, he'd got right onto it and had begun moving things into the hallway, and he'd come upon this old locked suitcase under a blanket. The suitcase was full, and he couldn't think what would be in there. It took him only a second to find the only unmarked key in the drawer where they kept the keys. See, if she really was her mother's daughter, he would never have found the key. "So I opened it," he said. And then he took her gently by the hand and led her into the dining room, where he'd laid out the entire contents of the suitcase in orderly rows, as if he were an investigator laying out evidence from a crime scene. Exhibit 1, Exhibit 2. "It's just a silly habit," she said defensively. And to her horror, she felt an expression like her mother's creep across her face. A furtive, sneaky look. "It's not hoarding, if that's what you're thinking." "At first, it just seemed like random stuff," said Oliver. "But then I recognized Ruby's sneaker." He lifted up the runner and banged it against the palm of his hand so that the colored lights flashed. "And I remembered how Clementine and Sam said that they'd lost one of her flashing shoes." "It's Ruby's shoe, isn't it?" Erica nodded, unable to speak. "And this bracelet," he held up the chain. "It's Clementine's, right? It's the one you bought for her in Greece." "Yes," said Erica. She felt a hot, itchy flush creep up her neck as if she were having an allergic reaction. She didn't like it. I could tell she didn't like it.
Everything here belongs to Clementine, doesn't it? He picked up a pair of scissors. They were Clementine's grandmother's pearl-handled scissors. Erica couldn't even remember the day she'd taken them. She pressed her finger to Holly's long-sleeved T-shirt with the strawberry on the front. Next to it was a tote bag with a picture of a treble clef. Clementine's first boyfriend, the French horn player, had given it to her for her 20th birthday.
Why? Said Oliver. Can you tell me why?
It's just a habit, said Erica.
She had no words to explain why.
A sort of compulsion. There's nothing of actual value there.
Compulsion. One of those solid, respectable, psychological-sounding words to nicely wrap the truth. She was as mad as a hatter, as crazy as a bedbug. Oh, she'd slept with enough crazy bedbugs in her time. She scratched the side of her neck.
Don't make me throw it away, she said suddenly.
Throw it away? Said Oliver. Are you kidding? You have to give it all back. You have to tell her that you've been, what, pilfering her stuff? Is that what it is? Are you a kleptomaniac? Do you, dear God, Erica, do you shoplift?
Of course I don't shoplift. She would never do anything illegal.
Clementine must think she's going mad.
Well, she really needs to be tidier, more organized, began Erica.
But for some reason, that really tipped Oliver over a precipice she hadn't realized he was balancing upon.
What in God's name are you talking about? She needs a friend who doesn't steal her stuff, shouted Oliver.
He actually shouted. He'd never shouted at her before. He'd always been on her side. She understood, of course, that what she did wasn't, perhaps, ordinary. It was a strange, unsavory habit, like gnawing her cuticles or picking her nose, and she knew she needed to keep it at a manageable level. But part of her had always assumed that Oliver would somehow understand, or at least accept it, the way he'd accepted everything else about her. He'd seen her mother's house, and he still loved her. He never criticized her the way she knew some husbands criticized tiny things about their wives. The woman is incapable of closing a cupboard door, Sam would say about Clementine. Oliver was too loyal to ever say anything like that about Erica in public, but right now he didn't just look mildly aggravated. He looked truly appalled. The room went blurry as Erica's eyes filled with tears. He was going to leave her. She'd tried to keep her craziness confined to just one small suitcase, but deep down she'd always suspected that his leaving one day was a foregone conclusion, and now the sight of those items laid out in all their useless, shabby glory confirmed it. She was her mother. She felt a burst of fury, and for some reason it was directed at Clementine.
Yeah, well, she's not that great. Clementine isn't that great, she said shakily, idiotically, childishly, but she couldn't seem to quell the flood of words. You should have heard the things I heard her say to Sam at the barbecue when I went upstairs. She was talking about how she felt repulsed at the idea of donating her eggs to us. That's the word she used. Repulsed.
Oliver didn't look at her. He picked up an ice cream scoop from the table and fiddled with the mechanism. It had a picture of a polar bear on the handle. Erica had put it in her handbag one hot day last summer.
After they'd had ice creams in the backyard at Clementine's house. After she'd performed at Symphony Under the Stars. Erica had just gotten the call about another unsuccessful IVF round, but it was nothing to do with the IVF. She'd taken the first item for her collection, a shell necklace Clementine had brought back from a holiday to Fiji when she was only 13 years old. Where was it? There it was. Erica had to pull back her own right arm because she so badly wanted to reach over and feel its chunky, rough-edged texture in the palm of her hand. "Why didn't you tell me?" he said. "About this? Because I know it's weird and wrong and..." "No. Why didn't you tell me about what you overheard Clementine say?" "I don't know." She paused. "I guess I felt embarrassed. I didn't want you to know that my best friend feels that way about me." Oliver put down the ice cream scoop. There was an infinitesimal softening around his mouth, but it was enough to make Erica's legs go weak and wobbly with relief. She pulled out a chair and sat down and looked up at him, studying the faint stubble along his jawline. She remembered when they'd first sat down together to do the draw for the squash comp all those years ago. He was the clean-shaven nerd with the glasses and the pinstriped shirt, frowning over the spreadsheet, taking it far too seriously, just like her, wanting it done right and done fairly. She'd looked at the stubble along his jawline, and the thought had crossed her mind, he looks like Clark Kent, but maybe he's really Superman. Oliver sat down at the table in front of her, took off his glasses, and rubbed his eyes. "I'm your best friend, Erica," he said sadly. "Don't you know that?" Chapter 72. "I'm sorry about dinner at Mum and Dad's the other night," said Clementine as she handed Erica her cup of coffee. They were in Clementine's living room with its original, but non-working, fireplace, stained glass porthole windows and wide floorboards. When she and Sam had first seen this room, they'd exchanged glinting looks of satisfaction behind the real estate agent's back. This room had character, and it was just so them. In other words, the opposite of the modern, sterile, and soulless sort of place that Erica and Oliver went for. Clementine was beginning to wonder if her entire personality was a fabrication, nothing more than a response to Erica's personality. "You are like this, so therefore I am like that." Right now, the living room seemed dowdy and dark and very damp. She sniffed. "Can you smell the damp? We've got mold popping up everywhere. Revolting. If it doesn't stop raining soon, I don't know what we'll do." Erica took the cup of coffee and held it in both hands, as though to warm herself. "Are you cold?" Clementine half rose. "I'm fine," said Erica shortly. Clementine sank back in her seat. "Remember when we bought this place and the building report said there was a problem with rising damp and you said we should really think twice about it and I was all, who cares about rising damp? Well, you are right. It's really bad. We've got to get it fixed. I got a quote from..." She stopped. She was boring herself so much, she couldn't even be bothered to finish the sentence. Anyway, it was all a transparent attempt at exoneration. "You saved my child's life, while all I've ever done is complain about you. You are all that is good, I am all that is bad. But surely I get extra credit points for all this self-flagellation. A reduced sentence for pleading guilty?" "The dinner at your parents' was nice," said Erica. "I enjoyed it."
"Oh, good.
good, said Clementine. Now she felt bad. She didn't want Erica to think she meant she didn't deserve her hero's dinner. I just meant with the broken glass and Sam storming off and... She drifted again and drank her coffee and waited for Erica to get to the point of why she was here. She'd called earlier and asked if she could come around. It was bad timing. Sam had taken the girls to a movie so Clementine could practice. The audition was only 10 days away now. It was the final countdown. But, of course, Clementine had said yes. She presumed it was something to do with the next step in the egg donation process. Erica nodded at Clementine's cello in the corner. Is your cello affected by all the rainy weather? She had that faintly defensive look she always got when she looked at Clementine's cello, as if it were a glamorous friend who made her feel inferior. I've been having a lot more trouble than usual with my wolf, said Clementine. Your wolf? Said Erica distractedly. Clementine was surprised. She was sure that she would have talked about her cello's wolf tone with Erica before, and Erica tended to retain that sort of stuff, especially because it was something negative. She loved bad news. A lot of cellos have it. It's like a problem note, I guess, is the simplest way to put it. It makes a horrible kind of sound, like a pneumatic drill or a toy gun, said Clementine. I tried a wolf tone eliminator for a while, but then I felt like I lost resonance and tone, so I took it off. I can deal with it. I just have to gently squeeze the cello with my knees. And sometimes I can rearrange the bowing to meet the wolf on the down bow, so... Oh, right, yes, I remember. I think you might have mentioned it before, said Erica. She changed the subject abruptly. By the way, while I think of it, I found one of Ruby's shoes at my place the other day. Erica pulled out Ruby's missing, flashing-soled sneaker from her handbag and placed it on the coffee table, making the lights flash. They seemed especially lurid in the dark room. I can't believe it! Clementine snatched up the shoe and examined it. We looked everywhere for that damn shoe. It was at your place. I can't even remember her wearing it too. Good. So, anyway, what I wanted to discuss today, said Erica, the egg donation. Right, said Clementine dutifully. She put the shoe back in her lap. Well, as you know, I've got the appointment with... We've changed our mind, said Erica. Oh! Clementine's mind whirled. It was the last thing she'd expected. How come? Because I'm really happy to... Personal reasons, said Erica. Personal reasons? It was the sort of phrase that you used with an employer. Yes. So I'm sorry we took up your time doing the blood tests and all that, said Erica, especially when you've got your audition coming up. Erica? Said Clementine. What's going on? Erica's face was impenetrable. Nothing, she said. We just don't want to go ahead. Is it because... Clementine felt sick. That day at the barbecue, I was talking to Sam, and at first I wasn't sure how I felt about your request, and... I'm just a bit worried that you might have overheard and you might have misinterpreted. I didn't hear a thing, said Erica. You did, said Clementine. Okay, I did. But it doesn't matter, it's not about that. She looked at Clementine, and her eyes seemed somehow naked and raw within her folded-up face. But Clementine was at a loss to interpret what she was feeling. I'm sorry, said Clementine. I'm really sorry. Erica lifted one shoulder, the tiniest possible shrug. I want to do it now, said Clementine, not just because of Ruby. I've got my head around it. I feel good about it. Was it a lie, she wondered?
Maybe it was true. She was exhilarated by the possibility that deep down she was her mother's daughter, a kind, generous person after all. I really want to do it, said Clementine.
It wasn't my decision, said Erica. Oliver is the one who wants to look at other options now.
Oh, said Clementine. Why?
Personal reasons, said Erica again.
Had Erica told Oliver what she'd overheard Clementine say? The thought of kind, honourable Oliver, who had always been so unfailingly polite to Clementine, whose face lit up when he saw her children, hearing Clementine's remarks, made her want to cry. She thought of the sound Oliver had made when he revived Ruby, that animal-like whimper of relief. She put down her cup on the coffee table and slid off the couch, falling to her knees in front of Erica. The sneaker fell onto the floor. Erica, please, let me do it. Please.
Stop that, said Erica.
She looked appalled. Get up. You're reminding me of my mother. That's exactly the sort of thing she does. That sneaker is under the couch now, by the way. You'll lose it again. She sounded crotchety, but somehow revived. The colour was back in her cheeks. Clementine found the sneaker and sat back up. She picked up her coffee, sipped it, and met Erica's eyes over the rim.
Idiot, said Erica.
Dummkopf,
muttered Clementine into her mug.
Arschlich,
spat out Erica. No, that's not it.
Arschloch.
Good one, said Clementine.
You big volidiot.
Erica smiled. I forgot that one, she said. And verpiss dich, by the way.
Piss off yourself, said Clementine.
I thought it meant fuck off, said Erica. You'd know better than me, said Clementine. You're the one who got the higher mark.
Too right I did, agreed Erica.
Clementine blinked back tears of laughter or grief. She wasn't sure which. It was strange because she always felt that she hid herself from Erica, that she was more herself with her true friends, where the friendship flowed in an ordinary, uncomplicated, grown-up fashion. Emails, phone calls, drinks, dinners, banter, and jokes that everyone got. But right now, it felt like none of those friends knew her, the raw, ugly, childish, basic way that Erica did. Anyway, the truth is, I'm ambivalent, said Erica. She tipped back her head and drank her coffee in virtually one gulp. It was one of her quirks. She drank coffee like she was doing a shot.
What do you mean?
I never especially wanted to have children, as you know, as people keep reminding me. That's why Oliver is the one driving this. I feel ambivalent. It was like she'd only recently settled on the word ambivalent and wanted to use it as much as possible. She was staying on message like a politician. She pointed a warning finger at Clementine. My ambivalence, by the way, is confidential.
Yes, of course, but if you don't really want a baby, you should tell him. You shouldn't have a child just for him. It's your choice.
Yes, and I choose my marriage, said Erica. That's my choice. My marriage. She stood up. Oliver's dream is to have a baby, and I'm not going to make him give that up. She picked up her bag. Oh, by the way. Her tone changed and became brittle. I was going through an old box of memorabilia the other day, and I found this necklace. I think it was yours. She pulled out an extremely ugly shell necklace and held it up.
It's not mine, said Clementine. I always hated those necklaces.
I'm pretty sure... Well, maybe I'm wrong. Erica went to put the necklace back in the bag. But maybe the girls would like it. She was giving Clementine a strange, piercing look, as if this really mattered. She was the oddest woman. Sure, thanks. Clementine took the necklace. She wouldn't let the girls play with it. It didn't look that clean, and it would be like wearing barbed wire around your neck. Erica looked relieved, as if she'd wiped her hands of something. I hope your practice goes well. Only 10 days until the audition, right? Right, said Clementine. How's it going? Not that great. I found it hard to focus. Everything that happened, Sam and I, just, well, you know. Time to knuckle down then, said Erica briskly. This is your dream, Dummkopf. And then she was gone, out into the rain in her sensible shoes. No kissing or hugging goodbye because they didn't do that. The German insults had been their version of a hug. You're off the hook, thought Clementine as she cleared the coffee mugs away. No daily injections. She thought of the "So You're Thinking of Becoming an Egg Donor" video she'd watched yesterday and how her own stomach had clenched in horror as she'd watched the nice, generous woman briskly inject her stomach with the drug that would cause her body to produce multiple eggs. She sat down with her cello, picked up her bow, and focused on working her way through her chromatic scales. Over the last few days, she'd been allowing an image to form in her head. An image of a little boy with Ruby's almond-shaped eyes and Oliver's jet-black hair. The image trembled like a reflection on water and then vanished. For heaven's sake, Clementine, how dare you? Her hand tightened on her bow. The image didn't even make sense because Ruby's eyes came from Sam's side of the family. There it was again. Her friendly wolf tone. It was a truly ghastly sound. She could feel it in her teeth. Sam always said she was overly sensitive to sounds because she was a musician, but she didn't think that was true. He was just astonishingly insensitive to them. There were only a few sounds she could feel in her teeth. Her wolf tone, a certain high-pitched shriek of Holly's when Ruby had wronged her, the wailing shark alarm at McMaster's Beach. She was suddenly transported to the last time she'd heard that shark alarm during that holiday when she was 13. Clementine and Erica had been in the surf together when the alarm went off. Erica was a strong swimmer, better than her. The alarm had made Clementine panicky. That sound! And she'd slipped as she waded toward the shore, and Erica had grabbed her arm. I'm fine, Clementine had snapped, shrugging her off. Full of that hideous rage she'd carried throughout that entire 2 weeks. But then, just a second later, she'd thought she felt something slippery and strange slide across one leg, and she instinctively reached out for Erica. You're okay, said Erica, calmly, kindly, soothingly, steadying her. Clementine could still see Erica's wet, white arm on hers, the salt water clinging like diamonds to her white skin. 3 angry red bite marks circling her thin, bony wrist like a bracelet. The fleas had come and gone in Erica's house like seasons. Clementine dropped her bow and tried to imagine her life without Erica in it. Without the aggravation, followed always by the guilt. A melody with only 2 notes. Aggravation, guilt. Aggravation, guilt. She picked up her bow and deliberately played the wolf note, over and over, letting the sound aggravate her and worm its way down her ear canal, vibrating against her eardrum, creeping into her brain, throbbing at the center of her forehead. She stopped, You shouldn't put up with a wolf tone, Ainsley had told her. Get it looked at.
When she'd tried the wolf tone eliminator, it was initially a relief. It had taken her a little while to realize that something else was gone along with her wolf. Her sound wasn't as rich. The notes surrounding the wolf tone were somehow dampened, less focused. She wondered if it was similar to how people felt when they first took antidepressants and they lost their pain, but everything else felt muted too. Flatter. Duller. In the end, she decided that her wolf tone was the price she had to pay for the sound of all those centuries of time held within the red-gold curves of her cello. Maybe Erica was her wolf tone. Maybe Clementine's life would have lacked something subtle but essential without her in it. A certain richness. A certain depth. Or maybe not. Maybe her life would have been great without Erica in it. Clementine realized she was hungry. She set aside her cello, and on the way to the kitchen, she picked up the horrible, knobbly shell necklace and chucked it straight in the bin. She went to the fridge, got herself a tub of yogurt, went to the drawer for a spoon, and the first thing she saw was the polar bear ice cream scoop that Sam had been looking for the other night. Men. It had probably been right there in front of him the whole time. She opened the yogurt, had a mouthful. It was really very good. Creamy, as they said in the ad. She was susceptible to advertising, but really, this was very good yogurt. It reminded her of her first taste of food after fasting. She hadn't been fasting. There was a feeling growing within her, a twitchy feeling. She was jabbing the spoon into the yogurt and eating it too fast. She thought of the opening melody of Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring, the high-pitched bassoon, the strange, jerky moments building to an ecstatic unfurling. She wanted to hear that piece. She wanted to play that piece because that was exactly how she felt right now. There was an upward spiraling feeling in her chest. Was the yogurt drugged? Was it simply exquisite relief because she demonstrated her absolute willingness to donate her eggs, but she didn't actually have to do it? Altruism without action. It didn't get better than that. Was it just that she'd had enough of feeling bad over what happened? She could never forget that afternoon, but she could forgive herself. She could forgive Sam. If he wanted to end their marriage over this, then she would grieve him as if he'd died. But goddammit, she'd get over it. She'd live. She'd always suspected this about herself, that right at the center of her soul was a small, unbreakable stone, a cold, hard instinct for self-preservation. She'd die for her children, but no one else. She wouldn't allow one mistake, one slip of judgment to define her life. Not when Ruby was fine. Not when life was there for the taking. She thought of Erica saying, "This is your dream, Dummkopf." That job was hers. That job belonged to her. She threw down the empty yogurt container, licked her fingers, and headed back to her cello. Not to work on her technique this time, but to play music. Somewhere along the way, she'd forgotten it was about the music. The pure, uncomplicated bliss of the music. Chapter 73.
"He's going to steal it," announced Holly, loud and clear.
"Shh," said Sam. They could never get Holly to shut up during movies.
"But he is, look."
"You're right, but..." Sam put a finger to his lips, although Who the hell cared? The movie theater was packed with wriggly, chatty, rain-crazed kids and their frazzled parents. Holly shoveled a handful of popcorn into her mouth and sat back, her eyes on the flickering colors of the Pixar movie. Ruby was on Sam's other side, sucking her thumb, caressing Whisk's spokes. Her eyelids drooped. She would fall asleep soon and wake up 5 minutes before the movie ended, demanding it be restarted. Sam normally loved a good animation, but he had no idea what this one was about. He was thinking about his job and how much longer he could get away with coasting. He was still the new guy, still learning the ropes, but he should have had those ropes learned by now. People must be starting to notice. The head of his division had said, "Might be time to invest in an umbrella," with a quizzical look at Sam's drenched clothes yesterday. It was all going to come crashing down. Someone would say, "The weird new guy isn't doing anything." "It's past crunch time, Sam. You need to get over it, to get on with it. Leave a goddamned umbrella at the front door." Why did tiny things like that seem so impossible these days? Ruby's head tipped gently against his arm. He pulled up the armrest and she snuggled up to him. Clementine was getting on with it. He'd seen something change in her after the visit from Vid and Tiffany and Dakota. "I feel better after seeing them," she'd said. "Don't you?" He'd wanted to shout, "No, I feel worse. I feel much worse." Did he actually shout that at her? He couldn't remember. He was becoming a shouter, like his own father used to be before age softened him. He shifted about in his seat. "You're wriggling," whisper shouted Holly. "Sorry," said Sam. The popcorn tasted like salt and butter flavored cardboard, but he couldn't stop eating it. Yes, something was definitely changing in Clementine. There was a new impatience about her, a brittleness. Except brittleness implied fragility, and she didn't seem fragile. She seemed fed up. She wanted to move on from Ruby's accident, and she was right. There was no point dwelling on it. There was no point replaying it over and over.